free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, see our past lineup of speakers and what's coming down the pike, download some of the past shows, and if you're listening live, there's some call-in numbers there if you want to ask some questions of our guests, which today, June 30th, 2008, is Steve Elf. He is the CEO of Broadstar Wind Systems. They have an AeroCan that is claimed to be the first turbine to break through the $1 per watt cost barrier. It enables distributed power generation in almost any setting, including densely populated urban areas, and can capture abundant surface wind energy in wind farms. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, Sterling. Thank you for inviting me.
You're certainly welcome. Well, you've got a technology. We've got a picture, a feature page at PezWiki.com about your technology, and we did run it by the New Energy Congress, and they did give it a thumbs up to be included in our top 100, so it's starting to work its way up and down or whichever way on that list as we get more information. We did have a number of people who thought there wasn't quite enough information to make an assessment, so one of the purposes of this interview is to try and get a little more information about it. Now, if I understand right, was that your company that recently received an award?
If we did, I'm not sure if we did or we didn't. We may not. We've received quite a lot of press coverage in the last 3 weeks. It's been quite phenomenal, and I'm not sure if we have or we haven't received an award. If we have, I'm very happy about it.
Okay. I realize I'm confusing you with our guest for next week. They received an award on their technology, and they also made it into our top 100. So let's talk about your system. If you could describe it, what it looks like, and how it works.
Thank you, Sterling. Okay, the turbine itself, we've been working on it for about 4 or 5 years now. It looks like a paddle wheel on a steamboat. That's the easiest way to describe it. But it does something that's different, where each paddle is actually an aerofoil. And the aerofoil flies through the air just like a very familiar thing in nature, and that's a bird. And what a bird does in flight is it changes its angle of attack as it rotates its wing around, trying to get the most of lift that it can do as it goes through that rotation. There's a second device that does this as well to a degree. And it's a good example, I think, of how to describe it is, and we talk about this in terms of lift versus drag. If you can imagine you were sailing a boat and you're trying to get from point A to point B, then you've got two choices. You could sail it, and let's assume the wind is going from point A to point B. If you want to get there the quickest, you would not sail in a straight line. You would tack and you would jibe across the wind because you'll travel faster. That's what lift does for you. You actually can extract more energy from the available energy, nothing more than that, to generate more power. And that's what we do in the wind turbine. We vary the angle of attack of each blade through 360 degrees to turn it into predominantly a lift-based device as opposed to a drag-based device. And we can generate more power in a smaller package by doing that.
Now, one of the primary objections that one of the New Energy Congress members raised about that design is the number of moving parts that would be entailed, where you've got each of these vanes at the end of your, you know, where the paddle wheel blade is going to have to be moving back and forth with each rotation. And so you've got a lot of vanes, and you've got a lot of rotation going on that makes for a lot of mechanical failure possibilities. What's your plan of attack to minimize that problem?
Scheduled maintenance. there will be wear parts in this turbine that have a lifetime, and as that lifetime moves forward, we will replace them. I mean, I'll give you a good example of that. The blades themselves, the ones that we showed down at Wind Power 2008, are actually an aluminum extrusion. We do all of our stress analysis with a company. It's actually been bought by Desalt Systems, but a company called Abacus, to do our stress and yield analysis. Those blades have a lifetime of about 10 years, and that's the six. That is based out of 6063 aircraft grade aluminum. Now, we can go to a higher grade aluminum and maybe get 15 or 20 years life, but it's cheaper to manufacture those blades and then replace them every 10 years with a scheduled maintenance program that won't incur a ton of cost to the turbine, and then just recycle the blades. It's just simply the economics. And the same thing with bearings and things like that. We can use aircraft bearings that might cost $100 a piece, or we can go with a cheaper bearing that may be replaced every 2 years, but there'll be a scheduled maintenance program to address issues like that. Sure, we've got moving parts, and that's what makes the machine more efficient. These are all engineering issues that have been solved in many, many different industries, and we don't think it's going to be an issue for us.
So when you talk about changing the angle of attack, is this something that's going to be computer-driven, or is it mechanically driven based on where it's at on the 360-degree cycle?
It's actually going to be a combination of two. In the smaller machines, it's going to be predominantly mechanical, and we do that with a very simple device that's been around for hundreds of years that's actually sitting in the car that you're driving today, and that's a cam. Cams work. They've been around for a long time, and they're very reliable, and that's exactly what we use to control the angle of attack. As the machines get bigger, we actually have mechanisms in there to just like an aircraft in flight, you trim the wing to adjust the amount of lift and drag to create generate more lift or more energy as it goes around. So there will be a degree of computer control to actuate and change that cam on the bigger machines.
As I look at this design, it looks like a combination between an egg beater and a paddle wheel, as you described it. In terms of the just the architecture of it, does this thing have to be facing? It seems like it would have to be facing into the wind, whichever direction. And you're talking in this description about being able to handle some of the turbulence and wind change direction, whatnot. I'm not seeing any method on here to have this thing pointed into the wind. How does that work?
There's two different generalistic ways that it's going to be deployed. Number one, on a building. In that case, it's unlikely that the turbine's going to yaw into the building, yaw with the wind. It's just going to be fixed across the parapet of the building. There's a good reason it's there. It's just like we call that the bluff effect. I don't know if you've ever walked on a cliff. I'm sure you have. But just before you get to the edge, there's not a lot of wind, but when you walk up to the edge, there's a lot. So you actually get a concentration in flow at that roof line of about 30%. And not all buildings and not all locations are going to be applicable. So you really want a building that has a prevailing direction of wind and has a good side to put it on. So there's a limiting factor on the number of places that it's really applicable to do that. But where you've got those factors, it is very applicable. The second method is where the actual turbine will yaw. And in this case, it would be mounted on a pole, just like a conventional turbine, and it will rotate from side to side, yawing, just as a conventional turbine does. And on the bigger machines, that will be electronically controlled, exactly the same as a GE or a Vestas or a Suzlon wind turbine does that today.
I wasn't aware that the commercial turbines are electronically controlled to point into the wind. I thought it was mechanical.
No, it's electronic. There's actually a vane on the top of those turbines. There was a recent article actually on Discovery Channel where they actually showed that mechanism. And literally that vane is the steering wheel for a wind turbine.
So that's what turns it into the wind?
Correct.
Okay. In this description I'm looking at, it says breakthrough technology that can easily adapt to changes in wind direction, So how is it that this would be easy to yaw into the wind direction?
You have an electric motor that's controlled by a computer that's saying, all right, you need to turn 3 degrees left or 7 degrees right, and that computer says, actuate this motor to turn the direction of the turbine to do that. That's exactly the same that most larger size wind turbines do it.
Is the direct head-on into the wind something that is mechanically favored so that it would, if you didn't have this kind of electric motor control, that it would actually, with small wind direction changes, it would actually point into the wind naturally?
It will do. We actually, in the configurations that we've tried so far, we actually have the center of, not rotation of the turbine itself, but it's your axis set back from the center of the pole, so it naturally falls into that position.
Okay, yeah, I can see that in this picture we have on our site.
Yeah. And that's aided as well with things like strakes and vanes, just like conventional turbines.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of a benefit to having a horizontal deployment of what hitherto might have been thought of as a vertical axis wind turbine. You make most of the power in the top of the turbine. So the higher up you can get that, the better, you know, while also trying to avoid and get over objections about visual pollution and being an eyesore. So you want to get it as low as you can do and as high as you can do without getting too many objections. But,
really?
For instance, we're actually working with a very well-known architecture firm and one of the biggest property development companies in the U.S., we're under confidentiality agreements with these guys, so we can't actually say who it is, but it's a 40-story building, and it will have about a half a megawatt of turbines in the top of that, five 100-kilowatt turbines. They won't be a horizontal deployment. It will be a vertical deployment.
And so the one that we have, the picture we have on our site is the horizontal axis, whereas this would be turned the other direction, so it would be vertical?
Correct. We can go either way. We'd like the idea of the horizontal deployment. It puts all the blade in a more consistent wind speed. One of the issues you've got with vertical axis wind turbines is you've got uneven blade loading between the top and the bottom, and if you can have a more even blade loading, it makes things better.
With the maybe as we look at this picture, you could give us a walkthrough of, like, at the bottom when it's coming toward the wind, what the angle is going to be and what's happening in terms of is it having to resist the oncoming wind speed, and maybe you could talk us through position by position what's happening at each place. And I would even recommend that you might want to come up with some kind of an animation on your site that people could look at that would describe that.
We could probably do that. in fact, I think that's a great recommendation. It's very complicated to explain over the phone, but essentially, and actually the blades are flying forward through the top of the turbine, and they're going away from the wind in the bottom of the turbine.
Okay.
But we're changing those angles of attack by a few degrees, just enough to generate lift all the way around. Now it's making, so try and think about a 20-mile-an-hour wind. Well, the typical tip speed ratio, which is a conventional wind piece of terminology, which is basically saying the speed of the tip of your propeller in a conventional turbine needs to be 7 times the speed of the wind for a wind turbine to be even economic. And in the big machines, they're typically at least 9.5 and approaching 11. In this actual configuration, we have a tip speed ratio that's something like about 2.5. So if you think about a 20-mile-an-hour wind, that blade's flying through the top of the turbine, but it thinks it's going through a 40-mile-an-hour, 50-mile-an-hour wind, as opposed to actually going faster than the wind in the bottom of the turbine. And probably the easiest way to think about it, I don't know if you've ever sailed, but the fastest point of sail is what we call a beam reach. And that's where you sheet in the sail. You anchor, if the wind's coming from 12 o'clock, you're going to be at about 5 o'clock or at about 7 o'clock and going flat out. That's the fastest point of sail. So all we're trying to do is angle that aerofoil to be at that fastest point of sail as it goes through 360 degrees. And just like you're sailing a boat, if you want to sail at 90 degrees to the wind, you're going to have to sail at a different angle than if you were going downwind.
So if you were to look at a energy, in terms of the amount that is contributing to the torque of the rotation, on the bottom in your picture, I would think that with where you're going with the wind, you'd want it to be flat, but since the thing is spinning faster than the speed of the wind, actually I take the top is where it, yeah, the bottom where it's going with the wind, you would want it to have it more of a flat shape so that it can serve as the...
You still make power in the bottom of the turbine. It's not a lot, but you still make power by going across the wind.
So is there any a dead spot where you're not gaining any advantage?
You're not going at some magical point in the bottom. There's a point where you're not really going to make any power at all, but it's for a few degrees. Most of the rest of the time, you're making power all the way around. You know, I'm a windsurfer, and if I've got a 25 mile an hour wind and I get on a beam reach, I can sail faster than the wind. And
you
that's just conventional aircraft wing theory.
Because you're going across, like for example, a water skier going back behind a boat. If he's going straight behind the boat, he's going with the same speed as the boat. But if he starts going perpendicular to the direction of the boat, then he goes a lot faster than the
correct
speed of the boat.
Same sort of principle. And it's the same. It's the same reason that that boat going from A to B doesn't throw out the spinnaker and put the sails out to the side and just get pushed along by the wind. That's drag. That's a drag-based device. If you sheet in and go across the wind, upwind, downwind, you reach points where your aggregate speed over time is going to be faster than just sailing downwind and being a drag-based device. That's why aircraft fly. You become a lift-based device and you just make more power.
So basically, you've taken your understanding of the wind economics from surfing, windsurfing, and you've applied that to a wind turbine so that as you are at the various positions going around this 360-degree cycle, the angle of attack is optimizing the direction of the wind so that you are picking up torque at most every position, except maybe a very small portion where you can't get any gain from it.
Right. And I use that as an analogy. I am an engineer, a mechanical engineer, and I do like sailing and windsurfing. But actually, we have a lot smarter minds than mine working on this, and those minds come from Lockheed Martin.
Mm-hmm. And what form of relationship does that take, if I could ask?
Former employees.
Okay. And your position, you're the CEO, and obviously you have some inventive interest here. Are you considered the inventor, or how does that work?
I'll give you a little bit of history on the turbine itself. I'm a technologist. I came from supply chain e-commerce, the world of supply chain with companies like Oracle and Ariba and others. And I've funded a number of different ventures, and this one being the first wind venture. They're all energy related. And we actually weren't even thinking about this concept for a wind turbine. In, I think, about 2003, my partner in the business, a guy called Tom Stevens, came up with a concept for a new type of helicopter rotor, which is essentially what you're looking at in the wind turbine. And we basically had no plans on spending $15 billion creating a competitor to the Osprey to do that, but we thought it was a neat enough piece of art, and we refer to that as intellectual property, to actually file some patents for that. And actually, we were awarded a patent for that technology about 5 weeks ago. About 6 months into that process, both Tom and I had been looking at that, and I think we sort of independently at the same time came up with, I wonder what this would work like as a wind turbine. And so we built a prototype, and we tried it, and sure enough, it worked pretty well. And we filed a lot more art, and we built some more prototypes and continued to test it, along with our other projects that we're working on. And had it not been for the realization that we have a huge issue in terms of global warming and the cost of energy, coupled with a political will to actually deal with these issues, I mean, I'll refer to one thing in a minute, we probably would not have launched this as a product for another year or so's time. But the marketplace and the will for people to accept wind now has become very, very prevalent. And we are just trying to enable things like distributed electric generation and the possibility of, and the reality of being able to deploy wind in an urban environment come to fruition. And what I'll say is, it's going to take more companies than just Broadstar to do that. There are a bunch of other wind turbine small and medium-sized wind turbine companies out there. People like Berge have been pioneers in this area for years, but it's never gone mainstream. And there's a reason for that. The cost of energy has never been an issue, and the price point of the technology has been such that the payback has been 15 years or more. It's just not made economic. And it's our goal, and I think it's the goal of others, in order to develop this to make a real impact to the environment and to the economics of North America and Europe in particular, we've got to do this. And I think we can do it, and it's going to be a collective effort.
On this coverage, we have that you're addressing from 1 or 10 kilowatts up to 500 kilowatt systems. The low end there, 10 kilowatts, is actually a bit of an overkill for a residential system. You only need about 5 kilowatts for the typical, even higher end residential, if you got a battery backup. Do we have that number right, or is
you have that number right? It's not our intention to produce a residential turbine.
Okay.
We're purely focused at one of my customers, and the 11 companies that we're working with right now are all fit this mold, are a company that maybe is a main, you know, if you drive down the freeway, you'll probably see some of these companies, is they have thousands of locations, and they have big footprint facilities, whether it's a DIY store, whether it's a major high street chain, whether it's a restaurant chain, or whether it's a commercial manufacturing company with lots of locations. But the people that we want as customers for the 10 kilowatt module, which is 10 kilowatt turbine, which is essentially a module, are people with buildings that are about 1,000 feet square or of that order, where we can put 20 to 80 to 100 turbines across one roof of across one side of that building. And those are the people that we're working with right now. It may be in 3 or 4 years' time that we produce a smaller version for residential application, but for right now, we just don't have the bandwidth to deal with a residential application type turbine. In fact, our website has been absolutely besieged with people wanting, you know, one or two. And we may well go down that route in a few years' time, but for right now, we just have to focus on a few beta customers, prove out the technology that is successful, and then we'll deploy it more widely, probably with a release time for general release in March, into the commercial market. And while we focus on the bigger turbines, 100, 250, and a half a megawatt, which will be out around the end of next year for deployment between the turbines on big wind farms, and for small-scale wind farms, in residential, rural, and business campus-type settings.
No, when you talk about existing wind farms and placing this between the turbines, immediately I ask questions about turbulence and locating these things so that you're not interfering with the wind flow through the existing turbines.
Exactly. Very, very good question. The whole reason that you put a propeller-based turbine on a pole 200 feet to the center rotation or then the sail, and you space them, and you have to do this, a minimum of 3 diameters apart, and it's typically 5 to 7 diameters apart, is so that the turbulence from one turbine doesn't affect the other, and the turbulence from the ground doesn't affect the turbine at all. What it does is it leaves quite a lot of viable real estate between those turbines that's not being utilized. And we have a turbine that's small enough and powerful enough to be economic, but small enough that it's not going to affect the big wind turbines, but it will increase the overall power yield of a wind farm. We'll actually go to wind tunnel studies in about 6 weeks' time, where we'll actually prove out this data.
I can see that might work from certain directions of wind, but in perhaps the prevailing direction, but sometimes the wind changes direction and wouldn't it then become more of an issue of creating some turbulence?
We'll find out when we put it in the wind tunnel and see what it does.
Now,
certainly the receptiveness of the industry to want to do that is there. There are only two issues. One, the big wind turbine companies don't want to see it. And two, the issue of warranties. And typically people like GE, Vestas, Siemens has a longer warranty at 5, but they've driven their warranty down to about a year. So most of the 30,000 plus big wind turbines in North America are actually out of warranty now.
Another application that would be, I think, a natural for the design, except perhaps with the number of moving parts, would be in like the tidal or river energy or that type of industry where you've got moving water, which is 700 times more dense than air.
Is exactly correct. Actually, I just got some. We do CFD modeling on all this stuff too, and we just had. Actually, I literally just got it this morning. Some CFD analysis of the 10 kilowatt turbine in a 4-knot current underwater, and that looks like being about a 40 kilowatt machine.
So, when do you see yourself tackling that one?
You can only focus on so much. It'll be coming, and we'll have to link up with some of the guys that are actually doing that. There's some guys in Florida that are actually working very well, and we're more impressed with them than anyone else on putting turbines underwater. And I think it'll come. I think
another thing you're going to want to look at is the Davidson turbine system, where they have a Venturi chamber around the turbine, which is the primary component of their design.
Yeah.
Their design doesn't really entail the composition of the turbine itself. And by using the Venturi shape, they're actually getting a threefold increase in the flow of water at the vicinity of the turbine. So if the water's going 4 knots at the entry point where the turbine is situated with the Venturi in place, you're getting 14-knot winds or water speeds.
I think concentrators are going to, well, period. Concentrators are going to become a big thing in wind turbines and undersea type stuff, water-based stuff. In fact, if you look at most of the innovation that's occurred in the small wind market, there are people developing a lot of different concentrator technology out there, and it accelerates the flow. If you double the speed of the wind, you make 4 times the amount of power. I mean, those are the economics. So anything you can do to concentrate that flow is huge. Actually, I think if you look at our website, it's a rendering, but there's one of those videos that says stadium, and we actually have concentrators, architectural concentrators, on those turbines as well, just as an example.
My understanding is quite a few wind locations do have a predominant wind direction, and I know one company, vertical axis wind turbine up in Cheyenne that I went and looked at, they actually shape the building around their turbine such that it's taking advantage of the prevailing direction of wind.
Mm-hmm. I think in 10 years' time, we'll be looking at buildings that are orientated that way and maybe even shaped to a certain extent to be beneficial to create concentrated flows. I think you'll also be looking at buildings that are incorporating solar built in and a ground loop. I think you'll have all three systems because wind isn't the only solution.
One thing we've not talked about yet is bird kill. Since this thing is moving faster than the speed of wind, have you done any studies on that aspect?
I think it'll be as bad as birds flying into a building. It's just a freestanding building, and it won't be as bad as conventional wind turbines just because our speed of rotation is slower. But avian issues when it comes to wind turbines, you can't avoid them. I mean, birds are going to get hurt. There's nothing you can do about it. The only way we can get around that with a wind turbine, or any wind turbine, is to put an enclosure around it to where nothing can hit it.
And of
but if you've got a large glass building,
you
have a lot of birds that die. They will fly into the structure, unfortunately. There's not really a way around it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they could have classes for birds.
We want to be as environmentally responsible as we can be, and we will do everything it takes to try and make that not to be an issue. But it's going to be an issue just the same as it is for any building, a car driving down the road, a propeller-based wind turbine, a boat sailing on the water, your house at home, or a wind turbine like ours. They're issues that you can't get away from.
What about the wind speed? Apparently one of the advantages of your system that it starts spinning and harvesting wind at a lower speed than what a typical turbine might get.
We're looking at a pretty good power from a low speed, from low wind speed, and certainly on tests we've seen this, we've noted that the turbine will start up on its own in as much as 2 miles an hour wind. I mean, it's not spinning at any degree to make anything worthwhile at those sort of speeds. It's just you can't avoid the power in the equation, power in the wind equation, which cubes the amount of power based on wind speed. So if you're low wind speed, you've only got so much power, and there's not a lot of it at those speeds. But we do have a low startup speed, and we do have good economies in lower wind speeds.
Let's talk about this equation, the dollar per watt cost barrier. For the layperson, what is that about?
For the layperson, price points right now, big wind, we talk about the 1.5 megawatt wind turbines. By the way, the 1.5 megawatt wind turbines are going to 3 and 6 megawatt turbines purely for the issue of better economies of scale, in other words, better dollar per watt. But mm-hmm. The price point you're seeing in big wind is $2, and this came out of Wind Power 2008, $2.25 a watt. Small wind, like our small wind turbine, our building module, 10 kilowatts, but in the range of, half a kilowatt or lower, all the way through maybe 50 kilowatts, are typically $3 to $8 a watt. We certainly talked to some commercial customers who've completely discounted even looking at wind. Their viewpoint is it's a 15-year payback, minimum. So what we've done is created not only, I think, a neat piece, a very simple, logical piece of technology, but something certainly from a manufacturing point of view, where we can be quite economic without really gouging anyone at all, at the dollar a watt range. Now, that's not going to be on the 10 kilowatt building module turbine, because just like everyone else, our economies of scale get better the bigger the wind turbine, but certainly in the 250 kilowatt and a half megawatt class, we can economically produce at that price point. In the smaller turbine, the building module, that's going to be in the $250 range per watt.
So the
still going to be, it's still going to be a very good price point relative to small wind, and we have to do that if we want it to go mainstream. Our goal is not to sell 100 turbines a year. We want to sell 10,000 turbines a year. That's the only way that we're going to take this market mainstream.
And when you're talking about the 250 to 500 kilowatt systems, what is the return on investment for one of those?
All depends where you put it. If you put it in a Category 3 wind area without tax credits, you're going to be looking in a 5 to 8 year type payback. You know, if it's going to be lower Category 3, high Category 2, you're going to be in the sort of 7 to 11 year payback type scenario. If you put it in a Category 6 wind area, maybe a year. So it all depends where you put it. Even coming back to my example of a corporate customer of ours, even coming at it from the perspective of a customer with 1,000, say, locations, it might be that only 5% of their locations are viable for this type of technology. It's not going to be everywhere.
So primarily, you're the first, your low-hanging fruit, so to speak, that you're looking at would be commercial settings where somebody wants to set up a bunch of these on an industrial complex to generate some supplemental power.
That will be the first product to come to market, and that's where our beta customers will be deployed. And the first betas will go up in November. We think that overall market, though, the demand that we're seeing is somewhat overwhelming compared to what we thought it would be. We think that the bigger market opportunity for us over the next 3 years is going to be in the 250 and half megawatt class turbine. Especially, I don't know if did you see the announcement from Gordon Brown in the UK on Thursday last week?
No.
Basically, the British government is going to invest about $100 billion in renewables and plan by 2015 having 30% of the electric generation in the UK coming from renewables. And more to the point, they plan on turning the North Sea or the eastern coastline of the UK into the equivalent of the Arabian Gulf from a wind perspective, both onshore and offshore. And the simple reason is, in the UK, the electricity is produced predominantly from natural gas, and they have a declining natural gas supply coming from the North Sea. They have the best wind resource in Europe, and they only have one working coal mine in the UK now. So coal is not a quick solution or an easy environmental solution for them to do. Wind is a solution. It's also not that sunny there.
I would think that your system, with the amount of mechanical maintenance that would be required, would be difficult to deploy in a sea-based system.
I'm not going to say not, but certainly it's not anything that I'm looking at in the next 3 or 4 years. We have all we can handle right now with what we're looking at. Where we're going to really score in places like the UK and the US is where people want to deploy turbines in a more rural or urban setting, where there's turbulence, and more importantly, where there are objections to how it looks. If we can have a lower hub height, if we can make less noise because of the lower speed of rotation, and if we can go in an environment that has turbulence, then we can bring that electricity closer to the point of use. The AeroCam itself has some benefits in terms of supply chain, and what we can do is, I'll give you this example. A 1.5 megawatt wind turbine has a blade on it that's 100 feet long. that blade takes the space of five standard 20-foot shipping containers. To move it around, you've got to have special permits, you've got to have special moving equipment, you cause a lot of congestions on the freeways, and you've got to even have special roads, let alone 200-ton cranes to go and actually erect the thing. We can put the same amount of blades as one big blade from one big wind turbine in a standard flat pack in a standard 20-foot shipping container and ship that in standard freight anywhere in the world. And even in the small turbine, a blade weighs about 35 pounds, and even on the big turbine, we're talking about 250 pounds. The actual blade mechanism itself can be raised and lowered to the ground, and they can be worked out at ground level. So the skill level and the supply chain infrastructure to support it is about the same as air conditioning equipment. It's just a different concept of wind, and what we're talking about is mass deployable, mass maintainable technology. And that's the difference that I think that we can make with the AeroCam and BroadStar.
Let's talk for a minute about the upper end of the wind speed. Here I'm seeing up to 80 miles per hour. What happens when you're getting winds higher than that? What do you do with the turbines? Do you take it down? What's going on there?
There's high wind speeds, and that's also been a problem with vertical axis wind turbines. Once you get it cranking, can you stop it? Two things that really help us there. One, if you do the horizontal type deployment on a pole, well, we can yaw it just like any other conventional turbine does. You can turn the turbine across the wind and it won't make as much power. We can also make power at that level because we can also change. You remember I told you that we could change the angle of attack and trim it as wind speed increases. We can actually vary the angle of attack so much that we can stop the turbine, basically stall it out. And we can even make it turn backwards.
So you basically have a braking mechanism just by changing the angle of attack.
You've got it. Just like an aircraft getting too high an angle of attack, it'll stall. It will stop flying and it'll fall out of the sky. We can do the same thing.
Wouldn't you want to still
not only the ability to make power into higher wind speeds, but it's a control mechanism as well to slow it down. And that's really the difference that we're making in terms of the technology, and that's what the AeroCams do.
Wouldn't you want to keep generating in high wind speeds if they were fairly constant?
I think there's a point at which you say, all right, we've got too much wind and we just want to stop it. Plus, there's maintenance, too. Certainly,
yeah.
If we're on top of a building and we're dealing with a hurricane, we want to bolt the thing down and make sure it creates as least drag as we can do. And I saw that some of the objections out there. We want to make it so that it creates as little drag as possible, and it also doesn't generate any power, and we just lock the thing down.
What if you're out on a hill and you've got a hurricane coming?
The device that we'll put on the bigger machines will actually, if you remember, we're going to be monitoring direct wind speed and wind direction because we're going to be altering those cams. When we do get high winds, it should interactively shut itself down or adjust the angle of attack to where at 80 miles an hour, it's probably making the same power that it would make at 35 or 40 miles an hour. But instead of a conventional turbine going, all right, we just need to shut down, we can keep making power.
But as you mentioned, that the different angle of attack, you get the wind speed too high, you're putting too much stress on your components and it's not worth the energy you're generating
right. For
the wear you're putting on your bearings.
So we'll just make the turbine think it's in a 40 mile an hour wind as opposed to an 80 mile an hour wind.
Because it's not head on. But it's
also not head on, or we change the angle of attack to just make it not very efficient.
But the angle of attack is going to put different angle of stress on your bearing system. Isn't that going to be problematic?
Not really. They're circular bearings, so you know they're rotating. It's just a conventional ring bearing, and we certainly, if it becomes an issue, we may have to change something, but it's not anything we've thought would be a problem up to this point.
I think of an analogy of the way I used to ride my bike when I was a kid. You know, the way you're supposed to do is you sit on the seat and you ride, you know, down the road, and the bearings are just fine. But if you want to do some tricks, you lay the, you know, you put the bike so it's 45 degrees to the ground, and you're hanging off the other side, and you know the bike's still going straight. You're not doing any cornering, but the bike is 45 degrees to the ground, and obviously you're putting a lot of stress on the bearings front and back. And that's what I'm saying is if you've got a different angle of attack of the wind coming in, it'll still turn, but you've got a lot significantly more stressing going on your bearings.
No, I agree with you. I think I've done that on my bike as well. I think I've fallen off a few times doing that. There are other technologies as well. We're looking at some composite torsional technology where we maybe even have to do away with bearings. So you're always going to have an issue when it comes to bearings. The issue is mitigating reliability, downtime, and cost. And if you want to have something that's got a lower life, because it has a lower cost, there has to be a scheduled maintenance program to actually come and replace those parts.
Mm-hmm. What about the issue of noise? How loud are these compared to a comparable bladed system, the three-blade system you see in the wind farm?
We had one, a small one, 6x6, and the larger aero cam. Is actually going to the 10 kilowatt module actually goes back on test at West Texas A&M, I think, on the 21st. I think that's when we're hoping to put it back up, and that'll be on a pole. But the smaller one we had, a 6x6, we'd have a 20 mile an hour wind, be standing right next to that machine, and a conventional three bladed propeller on a 100 foot pole, you was clearly making more noise standing right next to ours when it was 200 feet away. So you could actually audibly hear the turbine 200 feet away, 300 feet away, over the noise ours was making standing right next to it. And that's part of that is just your speed of rotation is a quarter.
So that's when it comes to bird kill, the speed of rotation is going to significantly reduce the number of fatalities compared to the three-bladed system.
I can't give you any statistics, and we haven't studied it. All I can say is we have more blade area, so our solidity of our device is going to look a lot more solid than a conventional turbine, and our speed of rotation is going to be less. But apart from that, we would have all the same issues if we were not in an enclosure as a conventional turbine would do. Maybe we don't hit the bird quite as hard if it does actually fly into the machine. That's about the big difference.
Let's talk for a second about the business end of the company. You said that you're going to be rolling out your first beta units in November. When do you expect to have commercial products available for sale?
Commercial products on the building module, we're targeting March next year.
And
by that time, we will have been. And we're not taking any pre-orders. We're not taking any deposits. Other wind turbines companies have done that. You know, our technology isn't 100% proven in the public eye, and we need to do that. We also want our beta customers to be very happy with how we're doing and how well the product's performing. We will have bugs. There will also be issues that we've got to solve. That's why you do beta testing. And we don't want to release it to the market until it's ready to be released to the market. And the
Assuming
same is for the
beta
machine.
Testing goes satisfactorily and you're ready to roll forward, what rate of manufacturing are you anticipating at first?
If we just start on our forecast right now, we'll be in the order of hundreds of turbines a month by the summer of next year. And that's just based off of the demand we've seen in 3 weeks, just off of commercial customers.
So it seems one of the big advantages of this system is that you can make a large output system that could be shipped very easily, doesn't have the huge construction crane required, There probably will still be some cranes, but they're not going to have to be huge.
The secondary kind of, I alluded to it earlier, is we've got a supply chain piece of technology that allows, instead of putting up one big one, one 1.5 megawatt turbine, you could put up six 250 kilowatt turbines, have it not be as high to the ground, and we could do three 1.5s. But there's some benefits to that. It doesn't need the big infrastructure. It can be shipped without all the issues of big wind. And more to the point, if one breaks, only one breaks. If something breaks on a big wind turbine and you've got the parts, you may be down for a month.
Yeah.
So what you create investment? More redundancy in the system by having smaller, more nimble points of electric generation. It's sort of like the same analogy as the mainframe computer as opposed to the personal computer. And I think that's what we're trying to do. Well, I don't think. I know that's what we're doing in terms of the AeroCam technology.
Okay. If a person wants to invest in your company, what do they do?
We're not taking investment right now. We will be doing a round of financing towards the end of this year. We will be doing a conventional type capital raise, but for right now, the actual company is being funded by my oil and gas company.
All right. And we've not given out your company website yet.
The company is called Broadstar, and the website is Broadstar Wind Systems, and the website is just broadstarwindsystems.com.
Okay. Are there any areas of technology or aspects that we've not talked about yet we could cover in the last 3 minutes or so we have?
I think we've given the main point, that is a scalable piece, and I apologize. It's a scalable piece of technology that can be deployed in wind farms between the turbines. It can be put on buildings, and it can fit into residential and rural communities, not individual buildings. And we're just trying to bring wind closer to the point of use. There's a big difference. If I can save, and this is why commercial customers like us, if I can save 12 cents or 15 cents a kilowatt hour electricity, that has a hugely different ROI to if I'm a big wind company manufacturing wind in West Texas, and I'm selling power for 6 cents a kilowatt hour. The economics of justifiable wind technology change. The other issue is grid infrastructure. And if you look at West Texas, we actually have 5 gigawatts of power generation up there. We have 3 gigawatts of local use. And we can only get 900 megawatts from the west side of the electric grid infrastructure to the east side of the Texas grid infrastructure, so we can't get the power to where it's needed. Now, if you look at some of the studies from Edison Electric Institute, right now the big 5 power infrastructure systems in the U.S., ERCOT being the one in Texas, they try and keep a 15% capacity overhead for outages, brownouts, and things like that. Between 2009 and 2011, all of our spare capacity in the system will have been exceeded. We've got an impending electric generating crisis that's not going to go away. And the quick fix for that, you're going to be turning on a lot of mothballed coal-fired power stations. And the only other solutions are going to be nuclear or wind and solar. So we have to find other solutions, and we have to get those solutions to be massively deployed and get over the issues of grid infrastructure to get the power to the point of use. And wind is going to be one of those solutions, and the small and medium-sized wind technologies can make a difference if they can be made commercially viable and widely deployed. And that's what we're trying to do. And it's not going to take just us. It's going to take all the other small and medium-sized wind companies and solar companies to make that happen.
Well, I appreciate you coming on our show and giving us your spiel about the Broadstar Wind Systems. We've been talking with Steve Else. He's the CEO of that company. And until next week, yeah, you've been listening to Free Energy Now. We wish you a happy venturing into the world of new energy and clean and exotic forms of providing solutions to some of these problems that we've been talking about. Thanks again, Steve.
Hey, I appreciate it, Sterling. You take care. Thank you.
You too.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.